Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome to the Iowa Women Podcast. It's a huge week. We're on the heels of our first bracketology, and postseason lacrosse is less than a week away, with the ACC and Big Ten tournaments starting the middle of next week. We will very soon have our first automatic qualifiers to the NCAA tournament. This week's podcast discusses the races in the ACC, Big Ten, and Ivy League, talks about the NCAA tournament bubble, but first, a very special guest joins in Kylie O'Miller. Kylie returned from multiple ACL surgeries to join the New York Charging in the WLL Championship Series. She shined under the big spotlight just like she did her years at Stony Brook. Hear her inspirational words to young players battling injuries, plus her insight on broadcasting, training youth players, and her outlook on the 2025 NCAA season. Her advice to teams heading into May: don't just block out the noise, create your own noise. The men's and women's NCAA championship weekends are heading back to Gillette Stadium. They're going to be held jointly for the first time since 2017. From May 23rd to 26th, there is nowhere else in the world to be other than Foxborough, Massachusetts. Eight of the best and most impactful games of the season. Friday will be the women's D1 semifinals, and it continues Saturday with the men's D1 semis, then championship action on Sunday with the men's D2, men's D3, and women's D1 finals, culminating Monday afternoon with the men's D1 final. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, loyal women's lacrosse fans and listeners, $5 off single-day ticket options by using code ILPOD at the checkout. So head to ncaa.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to championship weekend, so why not get $5 off? Show the NCAA how much women's lacrosse fans and our awesome listeners are excited for the games. Purchase your tickets today. Once again, that's ncaa.com/laxtickets and ILPOD at the checkout for $5 off your tickets. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. We've got a very special guest here on the Iowa Women Podcast, Kylie O'Miller. Kylie, you know, you had a wonderful NCAA career, now blossoming into a wonderful professional career and post-collegiate career. I imagine, you know, the WLL Championship, WLL Championship Series event was particularly special for you, you know, kind of coming back to the field after, you know, suffering injuries and, you know how stressful that can be for an athlete to not be able to perform. Tell us about that moment, coming back on the field and what it meant to you.
Yeah, it meant everything. I think in previous moments, maybe playing for the U.S. national team, I got emotional during the national anthem, but I don't think I've ever gotten that emotional during a national anthem as I did on the first game of the WLL Champ Series. The last couple of years have been, they've been a battle. They've been definitely a test of determination, of, you know, worth, of a lot of little moments that I had to battle through to get to the big moments, which was stepping back on the field. So, it meant a lot after two ACLs in 2 years. And, it was one of those moments where I appreciated the moment and the game and where the professional, women's lacrosse space is right now. And the fact that I was able to just be a part of such a monumental moment, that in itself, that moment was worth it for me. It wasn't, you know, necessarily about how I performed or, you know, how many goals or assists that I got, which 20-year-old Kylie might say differently, right? But I had a different perspective on it because of everything that I went through. So, yeah, it was really special.
Yeah, something that you had said, which I know I mentioned to you before when we ran into each other, but something I found so amazing is that you said you don't have to be the player you were before an injury. Can you talk a little bit about that, how you came to that conclusion and, like, you know, how you would communicate that process to someone that's going through an ACL rehab right now?
For sure. I mean, I have to say too, it's obviously such a common injury in our sport. I mean, any team that I've played on in the last couple of years, there's been at least, you know, 5 to 10 girls who have done it at least once in their past. So it's a place where there's like a commonality. There's a place, there's a community where you can go to and ask questions and things like that. But I think the biggest thing that I noticed throughout the journey was, not that I was never going to be the same player again, because I definitely can, but I think that there's growth to it. And I think that's what I realized was again, going back to that perspective thing, when I stepped out on the field at the Champ Series and now moving forward into my professional career, I have all of the, you know, for lack of a better word, crap that I went through the last couple of years in the back of my mind, motivating me and giving me a different viewpoint on how I'm playing the game. It might be a little slower. It might be a little bit with a little bit more wisdom. It might be in a way where I can see the game happening a little bit differently before I make a decision versus, you know, prior to these injuries, prior to those moments, prior to those challenges, I might have just been playing and being frantic about it and, you know, kind of making the mistakes and dealing with it afterwards. So, yeah, it's not to say that I'm ever going to be, you know, the same player I was before, but I think that's a positive. I think that's something that I'm taking the, you know, moments and the things that I've learned while I was sitting off on the sideline and gathering information by watching and taking that into my gameplay now.
Yeah. How do you get over the hesitation getting back on the field?
Good question. That's a big question that I get from a lot of girls that'll reach out about, you know, ACLs and getting back on the field and, you know, what that looks like. And yeah, I think the best advice I've gotten was you just need to get hit once. You just need to fall down once. You just need to, you know, take the shot that you don't want to take and roll around on the floor and then be able to, like, say, get back up and say, whoa, I'm okay. That is the moment where you're going to be able to realize, okay, wait, I'm not a patient anymore. I'm not injured anymore. You know, I did it. I'm back. I just fell down. I got knocked over and I got back up and my knee doesn't hurt. I'm fine. That is the moment where you're able to kind of say, like, okay, I did it. I can get through the hesitation. I don't have to think about it anymore. I trust it and I'm good. And it's kind of one of those things where you can't really search for that moment, right? It just kind of has to happen. But I think that comes from, you know, as you're listening to your doctors and your physical therapists, when the right moment is to get back into contact, get back into gameplay, get back into those kinds of things, you know, allow those things to start to happen to you because you're going to notice you're stronger than you think when you do.
Yeah, Kylie, it's, you know, it's not a long window of playing lacrosse after college. And yeah. I can imagine, you know, when you get hurt, especially, you know, ACL injuries, that's, you know, no joke for sure. Mm-hmm. There's some soul searching of like, you know, like so much of your identity has been wrapped into playing lacrosse at such a high level. And then, you know, maybe there's doubt that it can happen, you know, that you can get back to that level. I guess just how mentally did you get through it as opposed to the, you know, just the physical part of it?
Yeah, I think honestly the physical part was hard, but the hardest part has been the mental part by far. And I think I say that because of everything that you just mentioned, right, has been a doubt in my own head for the last couple of years is, you know, you think of one thing at first, you think, okay, I'm a female. When do I want to start a family? Do I have to stop playing lacrosse in order to start a family? That time is ticking. That might just be a myth, but, you know, that's the thing that's in your head as you go. Second thing is, okay, can I get back on the field in a way that I'm going to be able to keep up with these youngins who are fast and speedy and, you know, really, really talented? And am I still going to have a place out there that's going to make sense for me professionally? That's always been a doubt. And then I think too, like number three is just, again, like we mentioned before, like, can I be a new version of myself and that will still be okay? And when I get back, like, will I be able to, you know, continue the name that I've made for myself, I guess, in the professional space and in the lacrosse space. So, to answer your question in a long-winded way, I would say that those have always been doubts and questions in my brain since I went down the first time in 2022. And it always came back to recognizing that my day-to-day is filled with this game. I run two developmental companies, all based on lacrosse, all where I'm mentoring young girls who are trying to figure out their own journeys in this game and be better on the field, be better off the field, all of that stuff. So I have to say that a lot of the moments that I spent with those girls and conversations I had with them were what helped me continue to realize how important me being on the field is and how important, you know, me getting back on the field is for not just them, but for me as well. And how that would help me kind of like confidence wise and just be able to say like when I'm 80 years old, okay, I did it. I was able to get back on the field. Awesome. Was it perfect? No. But was I able to do it without giving up? Yes. And I needed to make sure that I was able to do that. So I think there was a lot of that mentality going through the tough moments was don't regret it when you're older. Push through it now so that you can, you know, continue to be who you are for these girls and for yourself.
Is there anything a coach or a teammate or like your physical therapist, anyone like that, anyone say anything to you that like really resonated in your progression back to the field or get you through like a hard day?
Yeah, I mean, if you know ACL injuries, if you're listening, you know that your quad muscle is the main muscle that they focus on regaining the strength in. So for me, just focusing on quad strength for the last 3 years of my life, I am so sick of quad exercises, to be quite honest with you. So my physical therapist now, whenever we, you know, sit in a chair and we're ready to do some leg extensions and he's trying to push me to get a little harder and my motivation's just not quite there because I just would rather do anything else than a quad exercise. He actually had to, you know, we tried to bring some humor into it because that's how I get through a lot of different things. So he wrote a little sign for me that said live, laugh, quad. Right up on the thing, and he would hang it up right next to the machine, and every time I sat down, it was like a little moment of just like, okay, we're just gonna laugh through this, we're gonna find the humor in it, and we're gonna, if we can get through these couple of minutes right now, we're gonna get better at this today. So yeah, I think there was a couple moments where we just had to find the humor, have some fun, keep it lighthearted. And then I think for me, the biggest thing that I noticed and the biggest advice I would give to someone going through it now that I recognized was that you have to focus on the little wins. You have to celebrate those little wins as you go through, because if you don't, if you overlook them and you're looking to just getting back on the field, or you're looking to that first time you get to run again, or you're looking to the end, you're going to miss all of these little steps right here that actually get you there, and you're probably going to be doing the process wrong. So focusing on celebrating those little wins as you go through are going to be what make everything super sweet as you get to the end.
And fun, that's what it's all about, right? And you know, when you look at this discipline of the sport, you know, this kind of Sixes style lacrosse, it's certainly fast and it's certainly fun. What has been your experience playing it? How much do you enjoy it? And you know, just for you, like, I don't know, has it kind of, you know, I imagine that there's like a rejuvenating factor about it. It's something new that's kind of happened since you've graduated college, and or at least it was being developed while you're in college. And I don't know, how much does that put, you know, some fun into the sport, that, and how much do you just like the discipline?
Yeah, I think it's definitely fun. I think it showcases, obviously, a ton of the talent that's in the game and the speed that's in the game, and the fact that the game can kind of flip on momentum in a split second is really displayed on Sixes. And I think that, you know, for me, what it has done at this point in my career is take some of the seriousness out of it and bring in that fun again. It almost feels like you're out there playing pickup lacrosse, but with that competitive edge of wanting to win the game, you know? So I think that it's kind of that perfect mix of everything. I think that for Sixes, it's not only amazing at our level, at the professional level, where you're seeing this display of everything on, like, right in front of you, but I think at the youth level, it's incredible because you're getting so many touches in these girls' sticks, right? They're getting to play every position. They're getting to learn how to play every position without feeling too specialized in something. And they're getting to just compete as athletes. They're just getting to run up and down the field and be like, oh, this is, you know, this is lacrosse. And this is fun. And it's fast-paced and it's creative. And I just made a mistake, but now the ball's coming back the other way and I have to figure out how to snap back out of it and, you know, do something in the next play. So I love that aspect of it, and it's bringing a little bit of my little kid back out into my 28-year-old self who's been through seven knee surgeries, three knee surgeries, not seven, but feels like seven.
Well, and that's one of the things that I find interesting, and going back to kind of your career at Stony Brook, you know, you said, like, you know, you make a mistake, you just move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And, like, the thing that I was always struck with you at Stony Brook was yourself, your teammates, and your coach, you guys were okay with mistakes. You took chances. And I guess just, like, as you're watching more NCAA lacrosse, you know, as a broadcaster now, mm-hmm. What do you see in the sense of, like, you know, to me, sometimes I feel like maybe people are a little too structured, a little bit too, you know, it's very focused and a lot of film and a lot of coaching and all of this stuff. But when you watch players play and they play free and, you know, not afraid to make a mistake, how awesome is it to watch and see? And what's kind of your recommendation in terms of, like, you know, having a little bit more creativity in the way that you play?
Yeah, and it's creativity. And it's also just, like, I think the best teams and the best players look like they're playing freely out there because they don't have this. This is what we said at Stony Brook all the time, right? If we had a tight grip on our stick, we wouldn't be able to play the game the correct way. We wouldn't be able to be successful. Meaning, when you have a tight grip on your stick, it means you're thinking about the next thing that you have to do, or you're thinking about the play that you need to be in, or you're thinking about what move you're going to make next, rather than just doing it and reading what's in front of you while you do it. So for me as a player individually, like, that always resonated with me, because I would feel, you know, terrible and super unconfident when I was gripping my stick tightly, you know, and I would make all these mistakes. But for me to just be able to be out there and read the game, adapt to the game, play through what the defense might be giving me, what the goalie might be giving me, make a mistake here or there so that I can adjust as I go, I think that was, yeah, a big mantra of what we had at Stony Brook, and that's, I think, what helped me develop into the player that I am. And then I think when I'm watching these players today, like, you see certain teams where you can tell that they work on the, I guess, like, the technique and the basics and the things to think about, but then you could tell that the coaches give them the freedom to do those things in a game scenario while they're reading what's happening out there, and then just kind of, like, letting them play, letting them be athletes out there. You know, what comes to mind right now for me is Hopkins. Like, they've been super fun to watch because of that. You could tell they have the basics in their back pocket, but when they're out there, there might be a set that they're running, but there's 19 different options out of that set, and they're not thinking about what those options are. They're just finding them as they come. So that's I think that's a really fun way to play lacrosse. I think that's how it should be played. And yeah, I think it's really, really fun to watch when you watch it that way.
Do you think that, you know, from a coaching perspective, I think that's one of the hardest things to teach. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you have these players who they don't know what they don't know, and you have to give them that leash to kind of figure it out, which creates, you know, the need for a lot of trust with your athletes.
Absolutely.
So I feel like that kind of is what it boils down to, is, you know, having a coach that has so much trust in their athletes that they're going to figure it out. Is there anything that you had with your, I know you and your coach Joe are very close and had a great relationship, but is there anything that he did to instill that kind of trust in you as a player?
Yeah, I think he said it perfectly. Like, he would kind of give us that system, and he would give us, hey, this is what we're looking for in this. If you don't see that, though, you're going to have to make a decision, and we're going to hope that it's the right one, right? So that would just take a lot of practice, a lot of reps, and a lot of making mistakes a lot of the times in practice to be able to see, okay, that's why, you know, maybe when this, we were setting up for this on offense and they slid in a certain way that we weren't expecting, I can't just still make that same pass, right? Just because it's the set, it's the offense, I have to react to that as an athlete. And he's got to trust me as the coach to be able to do that. Now, that trust comes from, like you said, kind of making a couple of mistakes. And what he did a really great job of was, you know, pushing us to make those mistakes in practice so that when game day rolled around, it wasn't going to happen, you know? And we were able to kind of read and just play and play off of each other as we went. And I think that's a big thing that I take into a lot of my coaching now with my young girls is, I try to throw at them any possible scenario that they could see, even if we're just practicing something as simple as a split dodge. It's, okay, you split dodge now, but what happens if the girl didn't fall for it? Or what happens if there's an immediate slide? What happens if there's a slide while you're about to shoot? What happens if, you know, like, all of those situations, like, you should be practicing in your skill work as well, because it helps you be a better reactive player.
Kylie, you've been doing some broadcasting. How's that going? And how has it maybe, you know, being on the other side of the screen, so to speak, you know, how's that made you maybe, A, appreciate the role of the broadcaster a little bit more, but also give you maybe a different perspective on the game watching from that viewpoint?
It's been super fun to see it from that viewpoint, and honestly just be able to watch these girls at the collegiate level, like, front and center, like, be right there in the booth for it and watch the magic happen has been really awesome, because I think even since I graduated, the talent level has just skyrocketed at the Division I level, so, and all over the college scene. But yeah, I think it's given me a new perspective on the amount of prep work it takes to get behind the booth, the amount of things that these broadcasters know about how the production works, you know? I know back in 2021, when I stepped on my first, you know, game at set, I had no idea what an on-camera open was. I had no idea I had to prepare these certain notes. I had no idea, you know, that I had to come with notes prepared on every single player from both teams. Things like that. I was just prepared to show up and talk lacrosse, right? And through the last 4 years, it's been really fun to kind of adapt into this new prep role. It almost feels like I'm prepping for a game the same way, which feels very natural to me. And then I just get to go on there and talk lacrosse and kind of break down the play. And it's been fun to be in a role where I know that my audience is a mixture of lacrosse fans and lacrosse, like, masters who know the game really well. So I can kind of work my magic into that. But at the same time, lacrosse has a lot of brand new viewers, whether they're family members of players or just brand new viewers in general. So rules need to be broken down. The game needs to be broken down, all of that stuff. So that's been the fun challenge for me, has been finding that balance of breaking down those two.
From maybe a commentator's perspective, like rule wise that, or like playing perspective, whatever, that just doesn't really make sense to you in women's lacrosse right now?
I would say that we're making lacrosse very difficult to cover by changing rules every single year.
I agree.
Is my take on that. There's not one specific rule right now that I could think of, but it's more so just that constant change of things every year to the point where, you know, again, we don't have all lacrosse professionals and specific human beings in the booth for all of these games. And then we go home and we get mad at the commentator for not knowing the rule when the rule was different 4 months ago. You know, so I think we need a little bit of consistency when it comes to, you know, what our rules look like, figuring that out. I would say any college coach is probably going to tell you the same right now. But I think figuring out what that looks like for us and sticking to it and continuing to make it fun, fast paced, but safe at the same time. And then making sure that that's just across the board so that you know, our new viewers and our new fans of lacrosse, it's, you know, easy to adapt and easy to learn one rule and then just be able to stick with that as they go and not have to reread the rule book before the next season.
Yeah, I could not agree more.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. And, you know, I remember Hopkins, Florida, great game earlier this year. And there was multiple review scenarios that happened in that game. Very much, you know, one was a goal, one was some sort of play around the crease, one was a clock thing. You know, they were very different scenarios, and it was certainly one of those. It was early in the season, and it was one of those aspects where I don't know if anyone, kind of speaking, really knew what was going on, and it hasn't really been, and it hadn't, you know, there wasn't a mechanism to relay that to the booth, so they were kind of in the dark and things like that. So there's certainly a lot of areas for growth, but, you know, certainly the rules, you know, post-shot clock era, pre-shot clock era, seem to be facilitating a game that is electric and a lot of fun to watch. And as you've been watching this year, you know, I think everyone is pretty much in agreement that there's three big teams in college lacrosse right now, with North Carolina, Boston College, and Northwestern. With those three, just tell me what you see in them, and, you know, someone who's played against, I'm sure, all three teams in college.
I never played against North Carolina.
Never played against North Carolina? Okay.
No, that's a fun fact. But after I graduated, Stony Brook in North Carolina started to become a regular. But I wish that was a matchup I had. But I'm friends with all of them now.
What do you see from these teams and these programs that, like, you know, this clearly look at the pedigrees of these programs. Mm-hmm. It's not a one-year thing. These are the programs that do it year in, year out. What is special about these teams?
Yeah, I think what's fun about this year for those three teams is that they are three, obviously they're three completely different teams, but I think they bring three different things to the table. When I think about BC, I think about the triple threat of Rachel Clark, Emily Pinto, and McKenna Davis. And then there's a bunch of other players who can make big plays for them, but I think of them, and when you have three assets as opposed to two that are able to have massive games and massive impacts, I think that is, three is way more dangerous than two when it comes to an offense. When you think about Northwestern, I just think of a program that just refuses to lose. So, no, they don't have Aaron Koikendall and Izzy Skane. Those are thankfully my teammates now on the charging. But I think, you know, they still have that firepower. They still have that will to win. And they're not going to let up until they're in that national championship game again. And then UNC is back, I think, is the big thing, right? Like, They had a year where they suffered a ton of injuries for big players, and yeah, they just needed to regroup, and they've absolutely done that. They never went away, but they're definitely back. And what's been fun to watch about them is that they're incredibly unselfish. I think each game you see them come out with multiple multi-goal scorers, multiple point scorers, their defense is a unit. And I think that's been really fun to watch for a team in UNC, because that's difficult to stop when they're slinging the ball around like that. But yeah, it should be a really fun May.
Is there, this has been a conversation amongst our staff, is there a fourth team that you're putting in there? It seems to change, not even week to week, like every 3 days.
Literally, not even week to week. And honestly, I don't know.
Well, for example, I was all in, the last time we recorded, I was all in on Hopkins. I think I called them
I think Hopkins is probably still my pick.
Yeah, a few rough weeks, but there's something special there, I think.
I agree. I think there's something special there. I think just the way that they play, and I think that they, like, after a couple big losses, they bounce back really well. They did in the beginning of the season as well. So they're like a battle-tested program that I wouldn't leave out. But yeah, it's that's what makes it fun, I think. Like, when I think about, you know, your three powerhouses like that in BC, UNC, and Northwestern – yes, they've always been around, but, you know, when I was playing in college, they were up there, and then, you know, Northwestern was trying to get back up there, and, like, we were beating Northwestern, and, you know, there were other teams that were in the mix at the top five, and Maryland was doing their thing, and but I think it's always been those top couple for a long, long time, and to see the disparity for that fourth spot or for that fourth through 10 spot over the last 2 to 3 years has been really incredible. Like, I think everyone's looking for that fourth spot, but isn't it cool that we don't know what it is? You know, I think that's so brand new to women's lacrosse and at the collegiate space, and it just opens up this spot for any given program to kind of do a March Madness surprise, you know, kind of thing. So, yeah, it's exciting.
I was just working on a little bit of bracketology, and it just took me back to your years, and, like, you guys famously had to go on the road and – that's lasted since you've graduated. And what's your advice to, like, when you get to this time of year, this is when people start putting out brackets and putting out who's going to be the seed in the tournament and stuff like that. A, how do you just tune it out or learn from it and focus on yourself? And B, like, what tips do you have for a player who is going on the road for the NCAA tournament?
Yeah.
You know, like, what, how do you handle the travel, the big stage and all of that stuff?
Absolutely. Yeah. We only ever played when I was there. We only ever played the first round of the NCAA tournament at home. And then we would have to go on the road after we won that. So yeah, I think for us, it was a lot of, you know, Coach Bellino would always tell us, block the noise. The only thing that matters is what's in our locker room. And obviously, like, we would create our own noise or create our own mantras that we'd be saying to ourselves and saying within our locker room that would kind of just overpower whatever could be happening out on Twitter or, you know, like, out in the polls or whatever it looked like. And I think that's important, right? Like, you need something else to focus on or something else to fill your head with instead of just saying, okay, I'm not going to listen to that. Like, you need something to shift your mindset to. So I think that was helpful for us, was just, like, making sure that we had certain goals and certain things that we were focusing on so that if anything else came up, it was not important. It was not what we were thinking about because something else was already on our brain. And then when I think about going on the road too, like, I think when you get to that stage, yes, it's nice to be home, I would say. Like, yeah, I would have loved to be home for some of those games. But at the same time, like, I think you know the importance of the game no matter where you're playing it. You know, you could be playing it at a neutral site, you could be playing it at the Maryland AstroTurf like we played, you could be playing it in torrential downpour at Boston College like we played, and, you know, no matter the situation, like, you should be preparing for it as if it's your very last home game as a senior. You know, that should be your mindset when you're playing in these NCAA playoff games, is there are seniors on your team who, if you lose that game, they're done with their college career. And most of the time you'll have college players that'll tell you, like, yes, we're playing for our seniors every single time, you know? You want to make sure that you're making it through to another game, another practice, all those things. So I think that's the mindset, no matter where you're at. You know, you're thinking, okay, if this is our last road trip together, like, let's make it the best. If this is, you know, our opportunity to make sure that it's not our last road trip together, let's make sure we do that. So, yeah, I think that's where a lot of our mentality came in.
Yeah, I almost wonder if, like, being on the road is more beneficial because you really have the opportunity to just focus on yourselves. Mm-hmm. When you're home, there could be, you know, some outside factors that play in, especially at a school like Stony Brook, where you guys were very Long Island-based, you know, people going home, seeing their families and everything, or friends.
Absolutely.
But, you know, when you're on the road, you are in a hotel and on the field, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and you're with your team, and that's it. Right. And that actually, like, resonates completely with what we dealt with at the 2022 World Championships with Team USA, playing at home, on home soil, in Maryland. It was the same thing, right? It was, you know, a lot of our players were from Maryland. Like, they could have went home to their houses, you know, while we were staying at the dorms in Towson, but, you know, you didn't. You locked in. You were in the team mindset. You were, you know, there at the dorms. You were going to every, you know, team dinner together. You were getting treatment together. You were, you know, you had maybe like 20 minutes a day where you're able to maybe see your family if you wanted, but it was all about, like, starving those distractions and making sure that the set goal was there and that was all that you were thinking about. So, yeah, totally.
I want to loop it back to the WLL. What's next for the Charging and what's next for the pro women's lacrosse in your mind?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think the Champ Series was incredibly successful in my opinion. Every game we played, the stands were packed. It was awesome. Every game we played, the feedback that we got from everybody at home was incredible. So I think people are just hungry for a professional women's lacrosse league that's going to stick around for us. And that's going to be there year in, year out. And it's going to, you know, give us the opportunities to shine as professional athletes the same way that we're starting to see, you know, with the PLL on the men's side. So I think that for me, it was really incredible to be a part of it at the Champ Series and just kind of get a little taste and, yeah, see what's up moving forward with the Charging. It was that group is incredible. I mean, you look down the roster and you're like, how many points are on this roster from college? Like, I have no idea, but it's crazy. And then to be able to see everybody, like, and how their brains operate while they're in a huddle or, you know, before a game, like, what some of their, you know, things that they need to do in order to get into that space, you know, like, these are players that you've played with maybe once or twice at the U.S. level or something like that, but to really get into the nitty-gritty of, like, what helps make them a confident player and what you've seen from afar as, you know, they're dominating out of the college scene. Like, it was really cool for me to be able to witness that with a lot of my teammates and then be able to kind of create our own new memories and moments and stuff like that as the first ever New York Charging. And hopefully we're going to get a win next year at the Champ Series. We can't go down like that in the championship game. So we're coming for redemption.
No, I thought the championship series was awesome. Like you said, mm-hmm. the crowd was phenomenal. The amount of kids there with signs, you just, like, really felt the love. Is there anything that you would change, enhance, do differently from your experience?
No, I don't think so. I think what was really awesome for us was to see all of the attention to detail that we have seen for the last couple of years in the PLL, right? A lot of us are super close to it. Like, my fiance plays in the PLL, so, like, you see it and you see the ins and outs of it. So to see all of those little details that they pay attention to for the guys was just copy and pasted for us, which was awesome. You know, like, it was something that you could only hope for and expect to be able to be given that same level of everything. And they did that for sure, tenfold. So yeah, I'm just excited to see, like, what they come up with next for all of us. And, yeah, the next couple of years, I think, are going to be exciting for pro women's lacrosse.
Kylie, we'll close kind of, you know, you're talking about the game at the highest level, professional level. I know you do a lot of teaching and training. You've talked about, you know, coaching some young girls. Two-part thing here is just, first of all, how rewarding is that? And what do you see kind of from this next generation of women's lacrosse players? And B, how can people get in touch with you? How can people work with you and train with you and learn from you?
Yeah, so I run KO17 Lacrosse, started that in 2018 when I graduated from Stony Brook. And we've got a local and global training community that we work on the development of the game. So we've also got a mobile app, the KO17 lacrosse app. It's free for all users. And then there's a subscription model if you want more access. But yeah, we have some awesome girls literally all over the globe. It's really cool for me to see, you know, a subscription come in from someone from Japan or Germany, or it's really awesome to kind of see that connection, across the world and people who just want to get better at the game. And yeah, so we do lots of camps, clinics, all that good stuff. And I think what I'm noticing in the next generation of lacrosse players is that they're just eager and hungry to learn because the exposure of the game is at such a high level right now, thanks to social media, thanks to all of this access that these young players have to, you know, us at the professional level and everybody at the collegiate level as well. They're watching. And just by watching, they're learning. But at the same time, they want to dive into, okay, how can I be like Charlotte North? How can I be like Izzy Skane? How, you know, like, how can I be that? Maybe not necessarily the same story, but how can I add those skills to my game? So yeah, I think, like, they're hungry and they're excited for what's to come, and I think that the talent level is only going to get better and better.
Emily, that was a really fun interview with Kylie O'Miller. Super inspirational, talking about her injury and getting back to the field, and a lot of great advice for young players. But let's talk about the current NCAA landscape, and it's going to be an enormous week this week. We've got the final games in the Big Ten and the ACC, with their conference tournament starting middle of next week, quarterfinals, then semifinals, then championship. Then we've got the Ivy League, which has just been a monster this year, and they still have 2 weeks left, so it's a little tough to predict who's going to be in and who's going to be out of that tournament. But every game there just has enormous postseason implications. So let's start with the Big Ten. And, you know, if you're a fan of lacrosse, particularly lacrosse on TV, which we all are, a lot of great options in the Big Ten. Over the next few days, Wednesday night, April 16th, Maryland at Rutgers is going to be on the Big Ten Network. Johns Hopkins is going to host Penn State, which is a big game for the Jays, who are coming off of a loss. Northwestern versus Michigan, that's going to be on the Big Ten Network on Thursday night. This game is, I think, the one that people had circled in the preseason, both of those teams being in the top five, Michigan kind of struggling a little bit at times, but now maybe looking like the Michigan that we all expected. Then we get into some immense rivalries over the weekend: Johns Hopkins, Maryland, Northwestern, Ohio State, Rutgers, Michigan, and Oregon, USC. After we get all that, we're going to have a tournament. We're going to have seven teams that make the Big Ten tournament, and presumably, but not set in stone, that Northwestern will be the number one seed, but we do know that Maryland is going to host the Big Ten tournament, so that's huge for the Terps getting that in College Park. So, Emily, when you hear all that and when you're looking at the landscape of the Big Ten, what's the major storyline that sticks out to you?
Yeah, similar to what you just mentioned, you know, where is Michigan at and what can they do? You know, they started off the year with a loss to Yale, which was a little unexpected based on how they finished last year and the returners that they had coming back. But, you know, they've worked out the kinks. And with this recent win, 12-2 over Johns Hopkins, they could be coming off a really, you know, that game being so successful could really propel them into being in a really good place when they face Northwestern. You know, Northwestern's only two losses right now are to BC and UNC, and no one's really completely tested them in the Big Ten. So I think this is going to be a really good game to watch and give us a really good idea of where Michigan is at right now.
Yeah, and you know, one thing that Michigan always has is kind of this trump card, right, with Aaron O'Grady in net. What's the recipe for an upset? I think number one on everyone's thing is have a goalie that makes a ton of saves. And I think more than any team, maybe Northwestern you could put in this mix as well, but like they've got that goalie who can steal a game for you.
Yeah, that's a great point. She's super reliable. She's been on, you know, if not all year. And I think, you know, Jill Smith, she's just someone that knows how to get the job done. You know, she's had buzzer beaters. She's had games with multiple points. And I think she's also just super reliable. I think what it comes down to is, are they going to be able to contain Madison Taylor, which has been the theme for every team that's gone up against Northwestern all year long. So I think it'll be exciting. I think the draw is going to be a really big impact factor on which way the game goes. And at the end of the day, I really think the game is either going to be Northwestern finishes very much on top, or it's going to be super competitive and a one-goal game.
Michigan will have Northwestern, then they'll play Rutgers to end their season. They look pretty firm in, you know, in their Big Ten tournament spot there, but obviously a win over Northwestern and shaking up who the top seed is and all that would be super exciting. The thing I'm really looking forward to in the Big Ten is Johns Hopkins versus Maryland. And I, you know, went through on Hopkins' website and, you know, was looking at the history and, you know, Hopkins has never won this game. And it feels like this is the year that they could. You know, Johns Hopkins, we've talked about so much. On last time we did this podcast, I called them a team of destiny. And then they went ahead and lost a few games after I said that. You know, they weren't really competitive against Northwestern. They beat Ohio State, but then they weren't competitive against Michigan, only scoring two goals in the second half. So, you know, this is a team that, like, has kind of lived on this razor's edge all year. You know, they've had these, like, crazy one-goal games that, you know, more often than not, they've been coming out on the winning side of. You know, that dramatic game in Syracuse is the one that definitely comes to mind. But, like, they need a shot in the arm right now. They need a little bit of excitement. So what more of, like, a momentum-building occasion would it be than for the first time ever in 26 games beating your rival in Maryland? They've been close. You know, 2 years ago, they lost in College Park by a goal. In 2021, they lost three times each game by one goal. One of them was in overtime. So, like, you know, it's – you could certainly see Johns Hopkins rise. You know, Maryland is obviously still Maryland, although this year I don't think that you know, they're not in the class that they normally are as, you know, kind of one of those teams that, you know, normally we're talking about as one of the top two or three teams in the country. They're still a threat, obviously, but, you know, they're certainly not there. But with Hopkins' rise and the way that they're playing and their ability to win close games, I don't know, it feels like this could be the year for a Blue Jay upset of the Terps.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think Maryland is going through a little bit of an identity crisis. They're so used to coming out on top, and for the first time in a while, I think they're really relying on a lot of underclassmen to do a lot of work, which is a tough place to be because, you know, freshmen are going to make freshman mistakes. And Hopkins has a really good balance of talent throughout all the classes. They have a lot of reliable players. Laurel Gonzalez on the draw, Lacey Downey and Ashley Mackin as finishers. You know, they just have been able to pull through and really, you know, fight for those one goal wins. I think the Michigan loss and how significant it was is actually setting them up for, you know, a little bit of success going into this game. You know, finding ways to reinvent their offense, reinvent their defense, and adjust. And I think one thing that their coaching staff does really well is they're never going to, you know, rely on the same systems. They're always going to, you know, adjust and move forward. And I think this game could put them in a really good mindset. And then, you know, obviously the bragging rights of a Maryland win, there's always something a little special about that being on the line.
Yeah, and if all that, you know, didn't add up to, like, kind of a great game, think of the kind of math implications, so to speak. You know, Maryland right now has the number 10 RPI. We kind of have them outside of that top 8 hosting section of the bracket. Mm-hmm. But beating Johns Hopkins would be a top 10 win. You know, that would have them looking, you know, looking like they'd be competitive for one of the top 8 hosting spots. We have Johns Hopkins firmly hosting one of them right now. But this is the time of year, and we're going to talk a lot about this in our next segment with the ACC, where these postseason games where you're playing teams who are super competitive teams with high RPIs, you know, really can shake up what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament. So let's look at the ACC because, you know, right now it looks like for the most part, the field is settled, how teams will be seeded and such will be a question going forward. But a lot of great games for the ACC coming up and a lot of TV games again. So again, if you're a fan of lacrosse on TV, we all are, this is something that's going to be awesome for you to hear. We've got Clemson versus Pitt. We've got Syracuse versus Boston College. We've got Duke versus North Carolina. All Thursday, the Duke-Carolina game is going to be on ESPNU. And then we're going to go into the conference tournament the middle of next week. And when you look at this ACC, obviously the big two make up the top of the ACC, North Carolina and Boston College. But overall, what's your storyline for this league?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of who's going to be in those other two spots for the final four of the ACC. I mean, Virginia is looking like they're getting a good spot. And then you have Virginia Tech, who just had this upset over Syracuse. And then Syracuse has been a little inconsistent, but, you know, they're still Syracuse with very talented players. And then you don't want to rule out, you know, Stanford either. So it's going to be interesting. I think those last two spots that are going to fight for the semifinal weekend really could be anyone's game of that, you know, middle chunk.
Yeah, and it's going to have enormous implications for the NCAA tournament. You know, when you look at like Stanford and Syracuse, for instance, there's certainly a chance that they can meet in the ACC quarterfinals, given the way that things are shaking up right now. And both those teams are kind of hovering that bubble of a top eight spot to host a game in the NCAA tournament. In our bracketology, we had Stanford in, Syracuse out. The ACC quarterfinal game with that, you know, who the winner of that who goes to the semifinals earning a hosting bid for the top eight seed in the NCAA tournament. Right now, we have Stanford in that. Syracuse just, you know, the numbers don't quite work in Syracuse's favor at the moment. But Syracuse does have Boston College still on its schedule. If they were to beat Stanford head-to-head again in the ACC tournament, you know, that'd be another quality RPI win. And I just don't see a scenario in that case where the committee would leave Syracuse out of hosting in favor of Stanford. Also, you have the travel implications. Syracuse being in the NCAA tournament is a heck of a lot easier for travel than if Stanford is in the NCAA tournament. So these are enormous games right here. And then you look at teams like, you know, Clemson right now. I think Clemson is on the bubble for the NCAA tournament, but they're a team that very well could create some noise in the ACCs. If they win a few games in the ACC tournament, those are going to be quality RPI wins and probably put them in the tournament over one of those last teams in, which is probably someone going to be that's in the Ivy League right now. Duke, you know, I feel like Duke has kind of gone under the radar with the way that they're playing. They're 6-2 in the conference, 12-3 overall. Just kind of been like super solid and, you know, not in your face about it, I guess you would say, the way that they're playing. They did lose to Virginia, which, you know, you already mentioned Virginia, and Virginia's kind of got that big top five RPI win with them beating Princeton earlier in the season. So, you know, this is where the best teams play against the best teams, and that has a lot of implications. So make sure on Wednesday you can just be by a TV all day, because the way that that tournament goes is they're basically going to be playing lacrosse all day, and you can watch it all, and it's, you know, great broadcast, and, you know, we'll certainly be watching all of that. Then the Ivy League, you know, it's been interesting. I wrote in Bracketology how, like, if it feels like we're talking a lot about the Ivy League, it's because the Ivy League has really had an incredible season. You know, when you look at their conference RPI, basically, you know, how does their conference as a whole rate in the RPI? You know, they're the second best, and it's basically been rising the past few years. You know, they were in the 20s just a few years ago. They were back there just a few years ago, and now they're, you know, certainly up there as arguably one of the best conferences in the country. And you look at the standings in the Ivy League, given that there's, you know, still 2 weeks left to play, it's kind of hard to extrapolate, you know, all the scenarios of who's going to be in, who's going to be out. But you got Princeton and Brown, both with 4 wins. Princeton has played one less game. So Brown is 4-1, Princeton is 4-0. Yale and Cornell, 3-2. Penn at 2-2. Harvard at 2-3, and then Dartmouth at 1-4, and Columbia at 0-5. Now, you look at that and you realize that there's going to be two teams that are really good, potentially NCAA tournament teams, that are left out of the Ivy League tournament. I still possibly see a scenario which a team, you know, like Harvard, gets left out of the Ivy League tournament, but then still makes the NCAA tournament. It's just kind of crazy. And, you know, these teams kind of have this circular thing besides Princeton of like Team A beating Team B, but Team B losing to Team C, but Team C also lost to Team A. You know, there's kind of all this crazy stuff. So, I mean, I don't know. What are you seeing in the Ivy League right now?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's hard to tell. It's one of those things that anyone can win on any given day in their conference. You know, I think we went into this year really expecting Yale and Penn to, again, be the front runners. And, you know, Princeton, I feel like they've been building a little bit, and it's kind of come to a head this year for them. And then Brown, I've talked about this before, but Katrina Dowd is obviously just doing a phenomenal job there. To be 4-1 and beat Yale and only lose by 1-2 Duke is truly incredible in such a short amount of time. She's turned that program around. So I would love to see Princeton, Brown, Yale, and Penn be in that conversation for the final four of the Ivy tournament. But I think Harvard deserves a little bit of love there. And, you know, Cornell's staying in the conversation. So it's going to be hard to tell.
Yeah, for sure. And you look at a team like Penn, you know, they're 6-5 right now. So for them, staying above 500 is something that they need to consider, because obviously if you're below 500, you're not eligible for the NCAA tournament. I believe they will be above 500 given what they've got on the slate. But it's just something to be concerned about. And, you know, if you look at the RPI right now, Harvard is 18, Penn is 19. But who, you know, it's kind of a toss up between which one do you think has the better resume. You know, Penn has some better wins. They've got a top 10 win over Maryland. They've got a better SOS, but Harvard's got the better RPI. They've got a win over Penn. You know, so when you look at these resumes, it really does. It reflects how much, you know, something that happens in March that maybe you forget about, or something that happens in February, really has implications for how the tournament is seeded. We mentioned earlier about Virginia having that win against Princeton, and that happened back in early February, but that's a top five win. So that's something right. That is going to be, you know, enormous for Virginia. So every game really matters. I'm really excited to see who gets into that. And I'm curious if we're getting to a scenario where, like, I don't know, is Princeton becoming the runaway favorite in this league?
Yeah. I mean, that's how it's looking so far. I still think Yale has the senior class that I think is not going to go down without a fight. So despite, you know, some losses throughout the year that were, you know, unexpected and not predicted, I think they're still going to be, you know, very much in that final conversation.
Yeah, and Yale did lead Princeton early in the third quarter of their game that they played. Princeton went on a huge run, and then Yale had a run of its own to tie it late, but then Princeton had another huge run. And that kind of feels like the story of these two teams in a way of like they have enough talent that they're never going to be out of any game that they play. If they're down by four goals with 7 minutes left, that certainly does not seem insurmountable for either of these teams. So if they end up in a collision course for the Ivy League Tournament Championship, that surely will be some must-see TV there for the Ivy League Championship. This is going to be an awesome week. This is, you know, when we get into next week, we'll be talking about actual playoff lacrosse, and then we're going to be talking about all of the AQs that are going to be up for grabs. There's so many good conference races out there. You know, I think of the Big East as one that's really kind of, you know, I don't know which way you would predict. The CAA is going to be really interesting. Friday night, there's a big game, Stony Brook and Drexel, that, you know, I think in past years, you'd be able to just kind of pencil Stony Brook in terms of their conference tournament, you know, prior to the CAA being the America East. But they've got some real competition with Drexel this year. So that's going to be another one to watch. And then you always have like leagues like the A-10, which, you know, have multiple teams that feel like they can win that conference tournament. So all exciting stuff. We can't wait to follow it. Make sure you go to ncaa.com/laxtickets, get your $5 off right now. There's no reason not to. It's $5 off. You know you're going to be a championship weekend, and we will be there too. So looking forward to it, and thanks for listening.